Hello and welcome to the Honest Politics Podcast. My name's Alex Gamsik and I am the founder of Honest Politics LLC. My company does high-level political consulting, but not for politicians. My services are for everyday Americans just like you and me. And let's get started. So this is my fourth take and I'm not redoing it because I keep messing stuff up. I'm recording this at 11:23, right before the 4th of July, and I am in the patriotic spirit. So I found an academic article discussing the Broadway play Hamilton and some of its complexities in examining the past and our founders and all that good stuff. So if you want to learn more about how to look at history in a realistic and complex way, then keep listening. If you want to just keep your Disney theme songs to yourself and not even care about history, then you can turn this off. Anyway, we're going to go look at the author real quick. We're going to discuss the article, and then I might have some final thoughts. But it was a thought-provoking piece. And if you're interested in that, keep listening. So the author's name is Dr. Matthew Brown, who is an assistant professor of business administration at the University of Illinois Springfield. And I know that might be surprising to have someone who's a professor of business talking about Hamilton and history and all that, but this man does have a PhD in economics from Florida State University and specializes in things like economic growth, institutions, law, and economics, which are heavily tied into history and politics. Economics is a very important part of governance. So I think he has some weight on this subject. Anyway, let's get back into the article that he talks about. He saw the play three times with the original cast, which I'm really jealous about, but good for him. He said the play is great in its own right as like a musical and theatrical production. It's fantastic. But when it comes to examining it as a work of history, as how Americans today examine the revolutionary period, as I call it, it oversimplifies and reinforces mythological notions of the founders. But he does say that this is not necessarily a bad thing. We look back on historical figures as residents of our own history. And that's kind of something I said, where we look at our own biases, gaps in knowledge, and perspectives that change how we view history. We're not going to see we're not going to look at Thomas Jefferson in 2020 the way that someone might even see Thomas Jefferson looking back from 2000 or from 1950 or from 1826, the year when he passed away. The founding fathers have always been revered kind of as starting this country, which became the most powerful country in the world and kind of started a trend to global democratic liberalization of people, where people had rights and freedoms, where that had not happened before. That started kind of with the Enlightenment, kind of a pursuit of knowledge, science, and arts. And, you know, Jefferson and John Adams and James Madison were considered the Enlightenment made flesh. That was a quote from this article. The article also talked about July 4th, and I wanted to talk about July 4th since, you know, that's today or tomorrow, whenever you're listening to this. The 50th anniversary of the 4th of July was a huge celebration by what's called the Jubilee Generation, the generation after the Founding Fathers. There were lots of parades, carnivals, feasts, public speeches, and public readings of the Declaration of Independence. But on this same day, July 4th, 1826, both Thomas Jefferson and John Adams passed away within hours of each other. And it's crazy because these two founding fathers were figureheads. They were both former presidents and figureheads of Jefferson was democratic republicanism and John Adams was federalism. To go over them very briefly, democratic republicanism sought less federal power, not really a standing army, and instead of industrialization and financiering, it would be more of an agrarian society with broad rights for the people. And then John Adams was the Federalist side, which thought, you know, industrialization, banking, financiering, a more powerful federal government, though not very powerful. You know, it's important to understand the distinction between Federalists and Democratic Republicans. They were pretty different from the political parties of today. But it showed that as soon as our Constitution was passed, there was a split into two parties. And there's never really been a system where we've had three political parties last for more than maybe one or two presidential cycles, third parties usually just turn into another part of the two-party system, if that makes sense. So getting away from that rant, Hamilton deals with the drawbacks of the founders by adding non-white actors to play as the founders. It puts the slavery question in the front without having to directly discuss it. So the play doesn't really talk about slaves, but most of the people in this play are either complicit or owning of slaves. And, you know, that's obviously a horrible thing. It was complicated in the time as well, because there were some people who knew that slavery was wrong, but it was not a common opinion. It was just kind of something that was, and either you were rich enough to have slaves, or you were not rich enough to have slaves. It wasn't like people who didn't own slaves were morally opposed to it. It was mostly they just couldn't afford them. So, you know, it's a very complicated subject for a very simple evil, in that it's definitely a horrible thing to own another person. The complexity is trying to place yourself as a 2020 individual into a world where this is kind of normal, even though it's completely horrible. One analogy I like to draw, which I know might piss some people off, but the way we treat animals nowadays, where we slaughter 10 billion animals per year just in the US, just for food, that doesn't count the fishing industry and all that, and we basically torture these animals right until we kill them just to eat meat, even though really, we don't really need meat in our diets the way that most people think we do. I think in the next 200 years from now, we'll look back and say, how could people have done this to animals? In the same way that we look back on slaves and say, how could slavery happen? But if you put yourself in the mindset of someone from 1780 or 1780 or 1780, they're all going to think different things, obviously. Just the way as someone in 2280 will think differently. But by putting African Americans and other minority groups into the positions of people who were playing George Washington or Thomas Jefferson, it made the audience think about race. And I remember, you know, some angry conservative radio people were angry about Jefferson being played by a black man, for example, because, oh, he wasn't black. But, you know, it really shouldn't matter. And the author here even mentioned that sometimes these Enlightenment ideals of liberty and freedom, or advancements in technology or arts, are colorblind achievements in and of themselves, even though obviously today they might not be applied colorblind. But you can take the achievements of Jefferson, for example, and have him be another race, and it would still be his achievements. It would still be fantastic. And of course he has drawbacks too, but that's kind of the crux of this article, is that people are complex. Nobody is simply good or simply evil. We have a mixture of both. And you can judge, for example, if you think Andrew Jackson was so evil that any good he might have had was overruled. But, you know, this is something I bring up to people, some of my more liberal friends, and they're very confused when I say Andrew Jackson actually was, like, a symbol for the working man. He represented the poor. He represented a pushback against the elites of society. He ran against and, like, he brutally ran against John Quincy Adams and the supposed corruption of kind of the founding father elitism that had passed down with his deals with Henry Clay to become president and all this. Jackson was the working man's rugged kind of person. And you see strains of that still in the Democratic Party today, where the Democratic Party of today will claim to be for the working person. Even the most socialist wing of the Democratic Party, it has some roots in Jackson's thinking. And of course, Jackson probably got his ideas from other places as well. It's more like a stream that Jackson is in the middle of, and the socialist Democrats of today are further down that stream. And of course, to take this analogy further, there was divergences and influxes of different groups, and it is very different, but you have to understand that there is good and evil in everybody. Let's keep going with this article. I know I'm going on tangents, but hopefully someone finds this enjoyable. You can always contact Alex at honestpoliticsllc.com. Be a guest on the show. We'll discuss this even further, and I think it'll be a good time, so just let me know. And now we're going to take a quick message break. Be right back. So, going back to Hamilton, the play, the show makes Hamilton into a hero and kind of shows Jefferson as, having everything handed to him. He's kind of the villain in the story for part of it. Both Hamilton and Jefferson are portrayed as geniuses. Hamilton coming from nothing and being like an immigrant who kind of had to fight his way through. And then Jefferson having everything handed to him on a silver platter, including having slaves. This kind of overshadows Hamilton's role as an elitist, being thinking that financiers and capitalism are the end all be all, or at least like the way to get America where it needs to go, which is pretty far from a lot of what the progressives of today think. Hamilton was pretty anti-immigrant. Next, we're going to look at the big picture, kind of the reason for this article and the point I found most fascinating. It was an intellectual dodge to shift from more controversial historical figures to less controversial ones, who were themselves complicated, and we stereotype and avoid having to confront their paradoxes and complexities. When Lin-Manuel Miranda created Hamilton into a progressive hero in this play, he kind of dodged the question of Hamilton's complexities being kind of elitist and kind of anti-immigrant. We're looking at Jefferson and making him out to be the bad guy because he owns slaves, skating over a lot of his accomplishments, whereas with Hamilton, we're kind of doing the opposite, where we skate over his faults and highlight the things that we today, or progressives today, or just Americans today might think is good. You cannot, like this play does, kind of put Hamilton and John Adams on the side of progressives, and then Democratic Republicans like Jefferson and Madison on the side of conservatives. To say that one is like the Democrats of today and one is like the Republicans of today is such a stretch. And, sometimes people ask me, oh, if I lived back then, what political party would I be part of? And I just respond, that's such a complicated question because the issues are completely different. The quote conservative and the quote liberal sides are kind of flip-flopped. It's easy to say the Federalists kind of won and their vision for the country was born into being. You kind of saw with Jefferson's idea of a small little tugboats as our military, or James Madison thinking that the militia was better than a standing army. And these theories were proven false. Jefferson's agrarian society never happened. So Federalists like John Adams and Hamilton and kind of George Washington, they did kind of win out. So it's easy to say the Federalists were right, but it's more complicated than that. While Dr. Brown was watching the play, the crowd, which is probably very progressive since it's in New York City, was very happy with Lin-Manuel Miranda saying, "Immigrants, we get the job done." But the crowd was also kind of uncomfortable when Jefferson was pointing out Hamilton's financial plans, which kind of put greedy bankers over the little guy, so to speak. And that showed the complexity. And then the author said something funny. He said, if you took Jefferson and Hamilton and put them on the political spectrum of today, they'd both be radical libertarians. Which, yeah, that's part of what I was talking about, where you can't put them in the Democrat or Republican of today. But my own thought is that if you did have Hamilton and Jefferson, they wouldn't look at our current issues and policies as someone from the 19th, I mean, from the 1700s. They would be in our time and have been socialized in our time. And they would see that we're not just a fledgling nation that has barely scratched the surface of our continent. We have basically fully explored the continent. We are the world's most powerful nation, leading the world basically. The US dollar is the standard for all monetary policy throughout the world, which in itself sometimes it's hard to wrap your head around how influential that is. And even, I watch anime and you see American references in pop culture all the time. You go to, look at other countries on a map and there's McDonald's everywhere. This kind of global dominance is completely different from what Hamilton or Jefferson would have thought. So, I mean, would they be radical libertarians today? I don't think so. I think it would be more complicated than that. So, I mean, it's a fun thought experiment, but the author did say, it's hard to imagine having a real portrayal of history. Taking Ron Chernow, whose book inspired this play, take his book and word for word put out the 700, 800 plus pages and make it into a play. They would not sell out. They would not win Tony Awards. You need to sell it to a crowd, and Lin-Manuel Miranda was fantastically able to do that. And then at the end of this article, the author said that as Lin-Manuel Miranda covered up Hamilton's conservative elements, a conservative could well make a play about Hamilton and cover up his liberal elements, kind of be as anti-immigrant and pro-capitalist as this play tried to downplay those. So, that's basically all the notes I had on this article. It was only like less than 10 pages long, but I thought it was really interesting. I thought it was good to think about as, it's the 4th of July and we're thinking back about the founding, the independence of our nation. I did bring up some points about just how far this country has come, not just as a country in itself, but as a global leader and influencer. And of course, there's some drawbacks, but you think about liberty and how. Even how, I'm who am I? But I'm able to put out this podcast for others to hear pretty easily and basically for free. It's just pretty amazing, everything that we have nowadays. Anyway, before I keep going on too long, I want to conclude and say thank you so much for listening to the Honest Politics Podcast. I hope you all have a fantastic Independence Day. Hopefully, I'll have some bloopers at the end. My name's Alex Gamsik. I'm the founder of Honest Politics LLC, and I'll see you next time as we seek to discover more of the stories behind the statistics. My company does high-level political consulting, but not for politicians. My save. So let's get started by talking about an academic article on Hamilton. Patriotic and complex. My services are for everyday Americans just trying to get through the day without messing up.